This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us today on a misty, I don't know, does dreary sound right on a summer day? Sean Tubbs, is today a dreary day or is that for fall?
It's a lovely day out there. It's cloudy and, you know, it's just nice to not have the sun for a day so we can all have a nice Sunday at home.
Always putting a positive spin on things. Our friend Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville Tomorrow, he's senior reporter there. And also, as I did my homework for this, Sean Tubbs, recognized by the Virginia Press Association with five awards, including two first-place awards for in-depth or investigative reporting. Pretty impressive, my man.
Yes, and I have to give thank you. And also, some of those awards were shared with Brian Wheeler, who's my boss at Charlottesville Tomorrow. So, and a lot of it is about the topic that we're going to discuss today.
Yes, everyone's favorite, or actually something that in this listening area, from Lynchburg to Richmond to Culpeper to Lexington, it is something that catches everyone at some point coming through the local area. Harrisonburg's 95.1, Charlottesville, Albemarle 91.9. We're going to be talking about the future of Route 29 here in the local Charlottesville-Albemarle area. It's had a long, drawn-out history. In past years, you've been coming here sometime in the late spring, early summer to talk about Route 29, almost always about the Western 29 bypass and its current spot in its evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And today, we're going to start by you sharing with us the fact that Western 29 bypass is dead.
It is.
How and why?
Well, it is going to die. It still has a very slow death. They still have to sell back the right-of-way that was purchased by the Virginia Department of Transportation since the mid-90s. There's a lot of land that still needs to be sold back and offered first to the original to the original landowner at the original price. So that's something that has to happen. This time last year, I think when I was here, we were waiting to hear from the Federal Highway Administrations to see what they would do. Would they give an environmental approval for the project, or would they require more study? In February, they sent a letter to the Virginia Department of Transportation basically saying that they did not think they were going to be able to give an approval as is, and they sort of left it up to VDOT to decide how to proceed. Of course, by that time, in the intervening time since then, we have a new governor. A Democrat replaced a Republican. Locally in Albemarle County, we had a sweep of the Democratic Party and a couple independents to give a majority on the board that was not necessarily as accepting of the bypass. I don't think anyone really ran entirely against it this time. It was sort of an idea because everybody was waiting to see what the Federal Highway Administration would do. And when they essentially said no, now we find ourselves in a situation where 4.5 months later, we have a whole new set of projects that are suddenly on the fast track and has a lot of people concerned.
So we talk about it being in its last gasps of breath because it has to sell back the property. In fact, I picked this quote, I believe, out of one of your articles. By the way, there's an article in today's Daily Progress for folks if you want to catch up on maybe a few details that we might not spend as much depth on as you would like. And Sean Tubbs, senior reporter from Charlottesville Tomorrow, as we talk about the future of Route 29. Quote, the bypass will remain in the long-range plan and the MPO's transportation improvement program while land purchased for the project is sold.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you touched on this, does this mean that the bypass might return if we vote in a new group of folks in the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, or if Lynchburg and other areas that have always pushed for this bypass push for it hard enough?
It's going to be a few years before that's possible, most likely, because the members of the Commonwealth Transportation Board are the ones who make that decision about whether a project is going to move forward or not. Back in 1990, they gave the first approval when they agreed for the alignment that we now know. It was known as Alignment 10 at the time. There were about 15 different options. The CTB chose that one in 1990. This last month, earlier this month, a new version of the CTB rescinded all previous approvals that have ever been granted. And what that means is that the land that was purchased for that no longer has a reason. It no longer has a transportation project attached to it. So that means that you would have to overturn that CTB decision to get this right, to get this alternate back on the table. And there, at this point, with discussion has sort of focused to these other projects that we'll talk about, there really is no active push to get the study going again to look for another Western, well, another bypass of US 29. There are different routes that people talk about, but each of them have different obstacles, many of which were covered back 25 years ago when the CTB selected the alignment that is now no longer viable.
Again, talking about the future of Route 29 here in the local Charlottesville-Albemarle area, certainly have a great effect on those throughout our listening area. Sean Tubbs, senior reporter at Charlottesville Tomorrow. Sean, how much time do you spend covering this topic? I mean, share with me and the listeners your expertise on this.
Well, it comes and goes. I've been at Charlottesville Tomorrow now for 7 years, and one of the first assignments I had to do was to map out the right-of-way for the bypass, and that involved going in and learning some new skills that I didn't have before. I learned how to use the geographical information system to see which parcels the Virginia Department of Transportation owned and had purchased for this. And if you plotted them all together, you could sort of see what the alignment would be. So that was one of the first things. And of course, at this time, the issue at that time, nobody really thought that the Western Bypass was ever going to come back to life because local opposition had pretty much been unified across party lines throughout the 90s and into the middle of the last decade. And so at that time, back in 2007, it was more about everybody wanted to know how that bypass right-of-way would be sold in order to fund a lot of these other projects. There were groups like the Piedmont Environmental Council and the Southern Environmental Law Center, as well as county staff and some elected officials, had this other alternative in mind called Places 29. And Places 29 essentially depended on these grade-separated interchanges. And so the question at that time was, how do you pay for those? Because there was a lot of money involved in that, and no one really knew exactly how that was going to get paid.
Let me make you pause for just a second.
Sure.
Because by doing this, I always learn a new thing, or I always recognize that not everybody knows what we're talking about. When you say grade-separated interchanges, you mean where something goes over or under some other road.
Yes, and we're seeing this now under construction at the intersection of the Meadow Creek Parkway and the 250 bypass. So that is an example of a grade-separated interchange where the through line, the one with the most traffic, is able to go clearly through the intersection without stopping, and local traffic has to get off and go through some other things. And that's one of the projects that we're going to see. So essentially, I guess I was sort of primed when all of a sudden the local opposition to the bypass was overturned in June of 2011 in the so-called midnight vote, this vote that happened very late at night. And no one knew it was coming, and it sort of caused it left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths about the process and about the bypass suddenly being back, because all of a sudden at that time there was a majority on the Board of Supervisors to make this thing go. And it's a really interesting case study. So a lot of those awards were won by going through the Freedom of Information by submitting requests through the Freedom of Information Act to look at the paperwork that was going on about this bypass, because all of a sudden, suddenly $200 million was dropped into this account for the bypass. All these other projects were funded, such as the widening of US 29, the Belmont Bridge, the Hillsdale Drive extension. Suddenly this area was infused with a lot more cash and a lot of money that it had never seen before, at least for this amount of major projects. And one of those was the Great Separate Interchange, but of course, opponents at the time thought that the bypass was going to be steamrolled because it was moving fast. It moved very fast. There was a contract let. The contract is still alive, even though the project's not going to go forward. It hasn't. That's one of the other things that needs to be tied up. And to wrap that up there, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes in the future, because those other projects that I'm sure we'll talk about are going to be somewhat controversial as people start to realize that they're going to happen really quickly.
So just another few moments on the end of the Western Bypass. You said earlier that who owns the land? Who owns the land that has currently been purchased? The state?
Yes. So the state has it. So basically what you have to have is you have something called the six-year improvement plan. And this is it's basically VDOT's budget. It's their active books. And because the sale of that land will go forward and VDOT will collect money into that account, you need to keep it open as long as that process is going. So the state owns it. They no longer have a transportation purpose to own it. There have been some suggestions that some of that land might be kept for the right-of-way for a bike trail or some other smaller form of road. Those projects aren't active. There are no projects for that. So basically, the state has to disperse that, has to begin at some point very soon to
begin. Okay, so you said that the first attempt is to resell it to the original or previous landowner at the sale price.
Yes.
What if that person doesn't want it? How is the property zoned? Can someone buy it, one of our area superstars buy it and turn it into more retail space? Or is it zoned so that it must be used as it is now with homes, et cetera?
Well, most of that land is residential. It's in the county's rural area, which means that commercial uses would be discouraged. Not all of it. Some of it does pass through the urban ring, I believe, especially as you get close up to the reservoir. And so a lot of that land is land that people want to purchase back. They were forced to sell it back in the 90s, and a lot of them want it back. A lot of the neighborhoods of people who were alongside of that would like to see it returned back to the original owners, or they just want some of the homes that VDOT has owned several of the homes in the path of the bypass for many years, and not all of them are in good condition. Some of them, neighbors have been calling on this process to happen because to the neighborhoods that this would go through, it's been sort of a sword hanging over their heads for the last 20 years. And now they'd like to move on and try to figure out what their neighborhoods are going to be.
All right, 11:12 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest today, Sean Tubbs, prize-winning reporter at the Charlottesville Tomorrow. We're talking about the future of Route 29. Let's do this real quick.
Our members are joined by the following underwriters in their support of WNRN.
T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing. T&N Printing can be reached at t-nprinting.com.
Parallel 38, next to Regal Cinemas in the Stonefield Shops, serving Mediterranean-inspired small plates, cocktails, assorted bottled beers, and over 100 wines, all available by the glass. Large parties welcome. Vegetarian and gluten-free options are available, too. Patio now open. You can make reservations at p38seville.com.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks, everybody, for listening today. This is WNRN, Independent Community Radio. Our guest, Sean Tubbs, we're talking about the future of Route 29 now that the Western Bypass has been, had all its money taken away from it. Where will that money go in the future? So, Sean, the design plan, it seems originally, now that the bypass is over, the focus has been on 29 and the interchange with Rio Road.
That's certainly the biggest of the projects. It's really a package of improvements that were recommended by a former VDOT commissioner named Philip Chouquette, who put together a panel, and this was the strangest thing I think I've seen. It was a panel where the outcome was, it was made up of elected officials from Lynchburg, business officials from Lynchburg, Danville, from people all along the corridor, including people in Charlottesville, two members of city council and one member of the board of supervisors. And over the course of 2 months, all of these different alternatives were discussed, and it was interesting to see how it sort of dovetailed with what was probably happening behind the scenes, which was the careful cultivation of doing projects that this administration could definitely have done or accomplished within its 4-year term.
And when you say this administration,
Are you Terry McAuliffe? Yes.
Okay. Not when this group was put together under yes, McDonald.
Exactly. So Shuchat was asked to sort of shepherd this process through. The recommendations were made. The group didn't take a vote. It was very transparent in the sense that it was all televised, and the different projects that were eventually picked, $230 million in total, with at least some of that stuff coming from the bypass, from the 197 roughly that had been allocated to the bypass in the last 2 or 3 years, was all taken and transferred to these different projects. $81 million for the grade separation of Rio Road, a grade separated intersection. We can talk more about that later. $54 million for a new road called Berkmar Drive Extended, which will connect Hollymead Town Center with roughly the Sam's Club. And another one, of course, is that 29 widening. It's basically, if you're driving 29, it's 8 lanes. It goes down back to 4, then goes back up to 6 up at Hollymead Town Center. This is eliminating what's called the hourglass, which those of us in the transportation, I guess, business around here sort of colloquially call it that, the hourglass, and the roller coaster.
Everyone else who drives it calls it really annoying.
Yes. So those are the three major projects, but there were some other ones as well. $10 million to study a second grade-separated interchange at Hydraulic, and that's just to study it. There was some more money. There was additional money put into the Hillsdale Drive Extended project, and probably the most surprising of it, though, was also the setting aside of money to create what's called a second train set and railway improvements for a second Amtrak train. That was another thing that came out of this. And the idea there is that how can you get more cars off of 29 throughout the corridor down from Lynchburg?
Again, our guest Sean Tubbs here from Charlottesville Tomorrow. Let me give out the phone number in case certainly this topic often brings up some people with thoughts and comments on it, but many questions as well. Being the new information, you're welcome to just listen in. But 434-979-0919. That's 434-979-0919. Call us up with your question or comment for Sean Tubbs and the future of Route 29. So that's a lot of money. Sean Tubbs, how does it compare to the money that has been spent in the last 5 years or so on the Western Bypass? Because that's the first comment I get.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a difference between setting aside money and actually spending it. So there has been money spent on something called preliminary engineering for the bypass. That federal approval was basically saying you couldn't actually spend money and begin construction until you get that going. So the money was set aside, but it was never spent. It was just waiting in an account, very similar to other projects around here where you're waiting for different approvals to happen.
Got to save your money for the big purchase.
Exactly. Compared to, and I don't have in front of me how much the Meadow Creek Parkway cost when you put the city count, when you put the city version, the county portion, and the interchange together, it's roughly, I'm going to throw out a figure, let's say it was about $75 million for the whole package. It took a long time to save up that money, and that's why that particular project took 40 years to go from conception to completion, because it had to be because Albemarle County had to save up its money, and there were various other things with that. There was an earmark from the federal government to get the interchange. There are no earmarks anymore like that. That was former Senator John Warner for why it's now called the John Warner Parkway, at least in the county. So this is a lot of money that suddenly showed up. And it's happening quickly because the administration, the McAuliffe administration, really wants these projects to be done. They want to be able to say that they did something on their watch. And that's going to be the thing that happens quickly because this past Thursday, the Virginia Department of Transportation, well, actually, I'll go back a second. At the same meeting where the Western Bypass was, where the previous approvals had been rescinded, there was also a transfer of money for all these other. Actually, that was in the June meeting. I'm sorry. In the June meeting, they transferred all the money to these different projects, which means that they are alive, and they're a little different. They don't. So, for instance, the Rio Road interchange doesn't need the same environmental review as, say, the Western Bypass did, because it's in the existing right of way. The same goes for the widening of 29. It doesn't. It it can move forward quickly. And so the money was transferred, that there's now the Chouquette plan has now created another group that is overseeing development of this. And this week they were able to not really give that much input into this request for qualifications. So in other words, anybody out there in the listening area who would like to help build these roads, can take a look at this document that states for these three projects, the widening, the grade separated interchange, and the extension of Berkmar, those are all going to be run by one company at one time, and all of that construction is going to take place at the same time, in the beginning roughly in the next year and a half or so. And that's got a lot of people scared and a lot of people concerned.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a bit. First, so it seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, but the big thing, maybe not in terms of everyone in our area, but for the vast majority of drivers, it's the interchange at Rio and 29,
mm-hmm.
which will have what's called a diamond interchange.
Yes.
So explain that a bit.
It's going to be, and this is one of the criticisms, is that so far all we really have is one conceptual drawing that was made of this, and there's no, and it hasn't really allayed the fears of a lot of business. Businesses in the quadrant of that area.
By the way, people can go to the Charlottesville Tomorrow website and see the diamond interchange.
Yes, I believe we have it someplace. I will, if anybody wants to take a look at it, I can certainly get it to them.
SeavilleTomorrow.org. And if you poke around a bit, certainly there's a whole tab devoted to transportation issues and you can find the diamond interchange.
Yes. And so the idea here basically is, and this goes back to the Chouquette panel, and the idea was put to them, what do you think we should do with this money, with this $200 million? And the sort of the answer that was sort of, I guess, that Mr. Chouquette knew he was going to get out was to ease congestion, was to find ways to make it easier for people to get through. And so one of the options that was at least floated during that process was this idea of an expressway. They called it something different because that's actually kind of a loaded term here, the idea of the expressway. There's fear in of some in the business community, actually a lot of people who have businesses on US 29, who would say that by turning it into an expressway, it's going to speed a lot of people past and they won't stop at the businesses. Well, the choke point, one of the major choke points for traffic is that Rio Road intersection, is the hydraulic road intersection, is the intersection of US 29 and 250 down at the southern end. But the Rio one is, it's essentially, if you can imagine, it will still be eight lanes, but so that median will be taken out. The four lanes in the middle will be tunneled underneath what's existing. If you look at that area right now, it sort of goes up and it rises up and then it goes back down. And this is going to be up to the contractor to decide and to design actually how to do this. But at least in theory, the idea is that you take those four lanes and there's no traffic light. You go straight through. And the outside lanes are basically go up to those intersections. So if you think of it, that's your intersection. So you would have two at the top of this intersection now where you would have Rio Road going over top of, I guess, through 29. It would be interesting to see how that's going to be accomplished. And the contractor is going to have to do this in 3 months. They're going to have to make all of that happen within 3 months because that's what VDOT wants. And so we'll see if any of them actually come forward with that plan.
So it's not really a tunnel, so to speak, but Route 29, whether you're going north or south, would go sort of underneath and straight through the interchange at Rio Road.
Yes.
And if you want to get off or on to Route 29 or any of those businesses, it's a diamond-shaped method to leave or enter.
Yes.
Route 29 to get to, if you wanted to get to, what's the shopping mall that has ACAC on it, to get to the other side where the new library will be and that Hardee's exist, mm-hmm. or Fashion Square or the Goodwill store. I think I've picked something on every side of the interchange there.
Yes, and that's the idea. But of course, if you step back, if you step back or I guess go up about another 5,000 feet in the air, that interchange, if you're coming south, let's say from Greene County or from Northern Albemarle County, it's also some way to figure out how to get people onto the John Warner Parkway, because Rio Road and that whole area down there is now, when the Meadow Creek Parkway is complete, it's the way to Charlottesville. And there's some idea that by completing that and making that an efficient turn, you will no longer have the traffic backups and you get people to get to where they want by increasing the capacity of the overall system. But the question is, how does that work and what does that mean? Going back to Albemarle Square for a second, it's possible that as this future roadway network is completed, if the business community is involved with that, hopefully or in some way, maybe they can figure out a way to redevelop that shopping center, because that particular shopping center, Albemarle Square, has a lot of empty storefronts, and it's about to lose another big one when the Northside Library moves across the street onto Rio Road. So that's one of the questions, and a lot of the business owners there, you've got Better Living, which is further down, and John Nunley, the owner of that, at one of these project delivery advisory panel meetings said, you know, we are very concerned. We're likely just going to take our business and go to Zion Crossroads or go to some other place because we're not sure if we're going to be able to survive this. And that's, I think, is a lot. That's going to be the real question of this is how does the county and the city of Charlottesville, when we get to the hydraulic one in about 5 or 6 years, how do they respond and help businesses through what will be a very tricky time? How do they keep traffic management going? Because I was communicating with the Lynchburg City Councilor last week, and they're not so happy about this because they're also concerned that without other alternatives to get through this corridor during that construction, they're very concerned that there's not going to be any way to get through. And so these are some of the questions that we'll continue to be following as this plan evolves and develops.
Here we are on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guest, Sean Tubbs, he's a senior reporter at Charlottesville Tomorrow. You can go to cvilletomorrow.org to find his latest articles on the future of Route 29. He's here with us today, 11:27. So, Sean, one of the questions that comes to mind is, or people have always talked about how if you're going to do that much work on Route 29 at Rio Road, obviously that creates a lot of havoc. It's a very large work in progress construction site for a large number of vehicles going through. Mm. So why wouldn't or wouldn't we build these parallel roads? I forget what the proper name of them is. I mean, I'm talking about Hillsdale Drive and Berkmar.
Yep, that's the correct term.
But I can't think of, but there's something there. They're called parallel roads, but they take a lot of the cars off where
yes.
where the construction would be before you even start the construction. So, but what you're saying is when they put it all together, they're going to do it all at one time,
all at once,
rather than building these parallel roads first and finishing them to help reduce the amount of mess in the construction area. Why is that happening that way?
I think it's happening again. It goes back to what this administration wants to do. They want these projects, as many of them, finished by the time that their clock runs out, because who knows what the next election is going to be. I think that Terry McAuliffe, and he has actually sort of taken the lead a bit more than the former governor did by getting involved, by attending the CTB meetings and saying, this is what I want. I want these projects to be built. Originally, it was envisioned that those parallel roads might be built first, but that's been one of the questions. The local community has sort of given up its say on how these projects are going to be sequenced, how they're going to be timed is another question. So, for instance, will the county allow the Rio Road intersection, most of the work on that to happen at night, not during the day, so you could potentially have some lanes open and not have actual construction going on when people are trying to get through? But it's happening this way because I think there is a sense that there's this money, it's sitting in the pot. There have been activists and groups who have been wanting these projects to move forward for many years. And there's also the sense that let's go through the pain as quickly as possible and then get back to whatever the new network will look like in
a few
years.
Rip off the Band-Aid.
Exactly. Because after this is completed, and this is going to be one of the questions, will the plan work out? Suddenly you have a lot more possibility if you no longer have to worry about getting run over by a car that's going through that very wide intersection at US 29, suddenly walking around that area becomes a little bit nicer. Taking a bike is a little bit nicer let's say, over Rio Road, passing over that US 29. So it's potentially a chance for that area to look completely different. Now, whether it's a bleak landscape afterwards or the beginnings of a new sort of urban community, that's going to be one of the questions to see how it gets executed, how it gets implemented. And I think it is that windfall that this community got. When the bypass money came to this community, there were a lot of places across the Commonwealth who were really salivating at getting some of that money into their areas. And the fact that it was kept here means that these were the projects that were identified, and that money, you know, again, who knows what happens with a future administration? Would they take that money and move it someplace else? So I think it is the sense that while they have control, they want these projects done, we're going to see what happens.
If you have a question for Sean about the Route 29 issues, 434-979-0919. I have plenty of questions, but call in with yours if you have one, 434-979-0919. Also, Sean, we're talking about the money staying and going, and the activists. There's always activists on both sides who do or don't want the project that's being discussed. I saw this quote somewhere: data shows this plan is better than that plan. It all just depends on who is making and reading the data.
I think that's a very, yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I think that it very much is subjective depending on what you want. And I think that one of the things that I had thought that might have happened, and this didn't happen, I didn't quite realize how much this administration was willing to not move forward with the bypass. It could have been that the response to that letter had been, let's model this other plan and let's see which one gives the better transportation benefit. How many vehicles might the bypass take away? But we didn't necessarily have that cost-benefit analysis. Now, what's interesting is that because that cost-benefit analysis, I mean, there's not a lot of money for transportation. It's one of those things that is constantly, you know, it's like, where do you invest? Do you invest it in transit? Do you invest it in highways? Or how do you spend that money? And I think that that cost-benefit analysis was never done, but in the future, and some of these other projects that are also part of this plan are going to have to go through a cost-benefit analysis, because in this last General Assembly session, there's a bill called HB2, which requires now decisions made by the Commonwealth Transportation Board to be made according to some sort of cost-benefit analysis. Now, those metrics have not been worked out yet, but it's important to say that these three projects, the grade separate interchange at Rio, the widening, as well as Berkmar Extended, they don't have to go through that process because they just got under the wire of requiring this extra scrutiny that might jeopardize future things, that might jeopardize future projects. And so we really don't have a metric for how, you know, because it does, I mean, you know, I think that given on what side you're on, you're going to look at things a different way given what you want. And, you know, as you said, the questions about that's as we go forward and as transportation journalists such as myself try to study and figure out how that metric works, it's going to be interesting because we still have other projects that are going to be required to move this forward. And that's also going to allow folks downstate in Lynchburg and Danville to sort of, you know, they're not really very happy with the way this process has worked. And they're not going to forget what's going on, and they're going to be pushing, and it's going to be interesting to see how that goes, how that political dynamic shapes up in the next election.
Sean Tubbs with us today.
Today's programming on WNRN is supported by
Just Curry, Indo-Caribbean curry on the downtown mall, now delivering all over Charlottesville for lunch and dinner. Chicken, beef, lamb, and vegetarian curries, plus plantains and sides, are a click away from your door at orderup.com. Just Curry, now delivering. You can order now at orderup.com.
Settle Tire, your locally owned auto and repair center on Preston Avenue for state inspections, oil changes, and more. Settle Tire carries all major tire brands and can catch your car problems early to keep you off the side of the road. SettleTireCo.com has info on Wi-Fi and shuttle service. Why settle for anything else?
Hello, I'm Nina Morris from Better World Betty. We welcome you to our Giving Grill on Saturday, August 16th from 11:30 to 2 p.m. at Whole Foods Market's outdoor patio. You can enjoy a lunch of grilled vegan or beef burgers and hot dogs, and all the proceeds will help Better World Betty, your local source for living lighter on the planet. It's move-in weekend for UVA students, and we'll have plenty of great college tips as well as back-to-school tips for students of all ages. For more information on this event, betterworldbetty.org. I'm Nina Morris, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for being with us again. Your questions, your comments on Route 29, 434-97909. One time for our guest, Sean Tubbs. By the way, let me let folks know that if you enjoy WNRN and the wake-up call, we are looking for a producer for the show. Our man Brandon going away to college. If you have interest in the program, you're available to volunteer at least a couple Sundays each month, and you have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. You can email me at WNRN.org. That's rmoore at WNRN.org, or just stop by the station. Give us a call. Ask for Melissa. All right, so back with Sean. Sean, we're talking about how everything works. You mentioned that there's three key parts. There's the interchange at Rio Road and Route 29. There's the expansion, added another lane or two to Route 29 all the way up to the Hollymead Town Center. And then there's Berkmar Drive. But Hillsdale is also one of the roads on the other side of 29 that is being extended to help take some of the traffic off the road. Why isn't that in this package?
It's not in the design build package. It is in the package of the $230 million that went to this. Additional money did go to pay for right-of-way, basically to pay for the land on which that road might get built. Now, that project has been administered by the city of Charlottesville. A design is in place. They've held what's known as a design public hearing, which is basically where the citizens come in to see what the road's going to look like and everything. That process was connected in December. I believe it was December of 2010. And so that means that road is pretty much ready to go. It's designed, the purchase of the right-of-way, and then construction date advertising. Those are some technical terms. The city wants to make sure that the sidewalks and the street trees that are part of that project are still included. The thing about a design-build contract is that the contractor hired, basically, they can submit whatever they want because they're working within a budget. They're competing with other firms to say, and there's some cost savings by not doing certain things. And the city did not want to give up that control. And so they said that they were willing to make that part of the bigger package. And the idea there is that the bigger this design build package is made, the more expertise and the more firms you're going to get wanting to work on it. But the city decided that they wanted to put conditions on that. VDOT wasn't willing to make those conditions and said, go ahead and build it as is. We know it's happening. It's been in our long-range plan for a long time. But that project is likely going to move forward within the next year, too. From what I understand, the negotiations haven't begun yet, but that road will pass through. There's two, I believe there are two or three major property owners. That would pass through the Seminole Square Shopping Center, which is a sea of asphalt right now. And one of the questions is, how might that incentivize the owner of that land to redevelop it in such a way that it's more like an urban center as opposed to a sea of asphalt with parking lot, as behavior changes? Because I think that's one important thing to keep in mind with this is are people going to be driving the same way we've driven for the last 60, 70 years? And that's kind of one of the concerns about a lot of this stuff is that would you build a bypass or would you invest that money in more infrastructure that's a little different? So that project is going to move forward. I don't know exactly on what timetable. There's another project I should throw in too, and this is the so-called Best Buy ramp. I don't know if I can, everybody calls it that. I don't know if Best Buy is paying us to say this or not, but it's just the easiest.
Like being at the football stadium where they're paying money to get their name attached to
exactly.
it?
Exactly. But it's the easiest way to refer to this project that would essentially add a second lane on from southbound US 29 onto the bypass going west and a third lane there. That project is also going to go forward separate from this because it's so close to the end. So that's actually going to be done under what's called design bid build contract, where the city or VDOT designs it. Someone else comes in and builds it. Basically, you know, it's like a paint by numbers. Not quite. It's a little bit more complex than paint by numbers. But in these other projects, we don't know what they're going to look like yet. So we don't – the city is – I'm sorry. Albemarle County certainly has desires for what they do. Like the widening project, for instance, they'd like to make sure there's some sort of a pedestrian or good bike trail somewhere in the distance there. So to complete – because it's very dangerous to walk right now between Hollymead and, say, Polo Grounds Road – but if you look at US 29, there are it's maybe not necessarily the best place to walk, but there are sidewalks. I've seen bikers on there. They're crazy, but I've seen bikers on there too. So all these projects are moving forward, and again, it's going to transform the community. And the real question is, how is all of this construction at once going to affect the businesses as they all go forward at once?
Talking about the future of Route 29 here in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area and how that affects not just the local folks, but certainly the improvements meant to help all of those traveling throughout our listening area. Sean Tubbs, senior reporter from Charlottesville Tomorrow. Sean, a couple things. So real quick to the Berkmore extension. You said that is going to go from, pretty much goes from the Hollymead Town, or connects the Hollymead Town Center to the Walmart.
Yes.
But that requires a bridge of some sort, right? Because part of the reservoir is there.
Yes, and that is included in the price. There's about $54 million that does include the bridge. This is roughly, and this solves a problem that we had with the bypass. Berkmar has been in the plans, and it's been one of those ideas that was conceived as an alternative to the bypass when the bypass was dormant. But when the bypass came back to life, it sort of, one of the questions was, well, how can you have both? How can you have this bypass and this Berkmar Drive extended bridge? Now that question is irrelevant. There would be a bridge that would essentially go up and go north, go to Hollymead Town Center, which is still growing. There's actually, on the Planning Commission agendas this week, there's a rezoning, it's a request to adjust a rezoning process. But that particular road, which one of the questions, of course, is, and this is a concern from the folks down in Lynchburg, is how do you make sure that we don't just develop all of that and have it turn into another stop-start traffic area with development? Well, one benefit there is that this road would pass through the rural area. So it would take another rezoning from a board of supervisors to develop that land. A lot of that land is owned by a couple of developers who have asked previously to have that land made commercial. And it's going to be up to the Board of Supervisors to determine what kind of road they want that going forward. But of course, that was one of the concerns that people down in Lynchburg had. They wanted as much of this money as possible to be put on existing US 29 because they don't buy into this whole idea that the parallel roads are going to take off traffic. And so that's one of the concerns is that will this Berkmar Road, will it be a connector or will it just become another driveway, another strip in the future? But of course, this road, if you can imagine for a second, this is not part of this package, but that road would extends up to Airport Road eventually, and then it would eventually go through the UVA Research Park that's up there, all the way up fairly high, I believe up to, I can't remember the name of the road, Patrick Henry, I think. Well, actually, I'm not sure what the, I'm going to redact that part. Up where the GE is or was. A lot of this stuff has been planned. It's been on the books, and these are just the sort of puzzle pieces that are being put together slowly. And it's going to be interesting, you know, will the contractors know how to make all these pieces fit together, or is it just going to become a patchwork quilt of...
It sounds like a Lego design, actually, is what it sounds like.
It's similar to that, but of course, we're all designing it.
Sean Tubbs here with us today. Sean, let's go back to talking about the design-build method, because... It seems to me that it's somewhat new. As I'm reading about it, it seems that it needs to be explained to a lot of people as to what it is. It's, you said paint by numbers. My thought when I'm reading it is design on the fly. Here we're going to design it, then we're going to do it. There's not going to be any area for the community to sit down and talk about why it's good or why it's bad. You'll get pretty much one shot. But it's been used before. The one that came to mind immediately was it was talked about as being used in emergency situations. There's a place in Minnesota where the bridge, an important bridge collapsed, and they used this design build method because they needed the bridge up and functioning as quickly as possible. Are we asking for trouble? Are there other examples out there where the design build method did not work well?
I think you could argue that, well, the design build method was also used for the Western Bypass. And one of the concerns, if that project had moved forward, and one of the doubts about it was that, so the lowest bidder essentially submitted this bid that other teams had actually protested and said, you can't build that, because it was not a very good design. That design included an 11% grade going from the extension of Leonard Sandridge Road up over Stillhouse Mountain. That was their solution that allowed them to save a lot of money by not necessarily building all the on-ramps they might need. So it was a lot cheaper. Design build is something that does come with that risk. It's certainly, I don't know as much about the US 460 project that is also probably going to cast a much longer shadow over the McDonald administration, because in that project, I think that was a design build project that I think the state is out, and I don't know the details. The state's out something like $300 million that was given to the contractors there for a road that hadn't even received all the federal approvals it needed and is never going to receive those. It's likely never going to receive those approvals. So that's the risk, is that by putting a lot of this stuff, and so with the project, with the Skanska branch, which is the firm that was hired for the bypass, we are out a lot of money that was spent on a design that was a real dog in a lot of ways. And there was a lot of concerns about whether or not that was an actual feasible construction at that cost. So with these projects, we'll be also watching for that. Is that, and of course, I'm not an expert. In terms of knowing the accounting of it, but I know enough about a lot of some feasibility questions. And of course, I think by having the night work on these projects, is that going to be enough to move them forward? And that's going to be what we're going to have to all expect. It's important to also say that there will be something called a design public hearing. There will be public input for each of these different designs. What form that will take and on what timetable, not quite sure. The contract, so VDOT's going to go through this process. We're at the first phase of the procurement process, but they want to move fast. The governor wants to have, or actually, in this case, I should say Mr. Chouquette would like to have these projects, a contract approved by February. That's only 6 months away. And then hopefully receive the notice to proceed with construction as early as next summer. So these projects are going to move forward. Now, that Rio Road interchange, I don't want to alarm anybody by saying that's going to happen very, very quickly. The earliest that would go under construction, and the actual existing intersection cannot be disrupted until after UVA's graduation in 2016. So, but that's a lot of design work. It's a lot of public education that the county and VDOT have to come up with. But for anybody listening, if you're on that corridor, you will see people in yellow jump, those protective things. You're going to see them out there now, and they're not starting construction, but they're doing a lot of the geotechnical work required to inform a lot of the studies. So it's happening.
Right. You say geotechnical work. That's because they're going to dig some big parts of land and earth up.
Yes.
Because the new Diamond Interchange would go under the current Rio Road.
Mm-hmm. And it's not the design. You might have seen there are other designs for other different ways that intersection might have been configured. And the real question going forward is going to be the hydraulic one. And it's interesting. This is, which is going to be a much more disruptive and probably, because there's a lot more moving parts there. You've got Stonefield there. You've got the Kmart on the other side that's going to redevelop probably in the same time. I mean, there's a lot of things moving on US 29 as this community changes a little bit and as a lot of these storefronts change. And of course, you know, you've got this, there's 58,000 vehicles or so that travel through this corridor every day. It's a lot of traffic. It's our major north-south corridor through this area. And it's going to be interesting. As you said, they've got one shot to do this. And then who knows what will happen in the future.
Sean Tubbs here from Charlottesville Tomorrow as we, about 10 minutes left, talking about the future of Route 29. Sean, you touched on this early in the discussion about where all the money is being tossed. And that may be a simple word, but You talked about building a second, or money being given so that there's another train.
Yes.
From Charlottesville to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Why is that important in removing traffic off of Route 29? Are you someone who truly believes, or are there numbers out there, instead of putting it all on you, that show that a second train from Charlottesville to Washington, D.C. will remove enough noticeable traffic off Route 29 traveling that way to make it worthwhile?
Well, I think that was, again, that was a surprise. And my initial reading when the Chouquette panel was meeting was that they had produced numbers that were fairly low, that on a daily basis it might remove, and this is not a number that's close in my head, something like 400 vehicles a day, an extra 400, which in the grand scheme of things isn't a lot. And I'm not sure of that number, but it wasn't that high a number. But I think, though, that I think it probably points to a priority of the McAuliffe administration to invest in trains. There's an ambitious plan to restore passenger service to Roanoke. I can't remember the exact date that they want to get that in there. But this second train set would probably go a long way. This is the train that originated, so if you go back 5 years, the daily service from Lynchburg to D.C. up to New York began, and it's been a success. It's one of Amtrak's most profitable routes. It sells out. It's a success story for Charlottesville. It gets people off the road on the entire corridor, and it's been proven to be at least it's a success. And one of the questions is that it's an alternative. It's an alternative to people who don't necessarily have to get in their car. And that is one of the questions. As this generation that grows up, they're using their cars a lot less. A lot of people aren't getting driver's licenses anymore. This is becoming, we are now connected to the urban transport, the inner city transportation network up the East Coast. So this is an investment, and this would go for operations, but it would go for the track maintenance. And this is where it gets sort of strange in some ways, because these are all more or less private railroad lines. And they need certain improvements, they say, in order to increase the capacity. So these are things like extra sidings, signal improvements. This would clear the way for a lot of that stuff to get done. And again, I was very surprised that this money, originally they had said they were going to fund 25% of this, and that was about $5 million to get the tracks upgraded and also to purchase the rolling stock that's necessary. So that's moving forward, and I think that's sort of an aside, because originally the Chouquette package was about $203 million. That was the money they had to play with, and this extra money, I think, was sort of thrown on as a cherry on the cake. I'm not even so sure it's necessarily as related to it. I think it's an investment that the McAuliffe administration was going to make anyway, and they certainly have.
Let's see, we got a new phone system here for me. Let's see if I can use it right. Caller, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Hear me.
Hello.
Hello. My name is David. I'm calling from down in Lynchburg. But I'm not about where the money goes, but I'm curious. This whole process has so many different parts, and it seems like there's 75 different chefs for the same soup. Isn't this exactly what the government transportation department is for? Is to gather all these projects together and make a coherent plan together with it. It seems like you're talking about all these different parts that have contractors who have rights and people speaking to it, but shouldn't there be a single office, a buck stops here person?
Yes, and I think that so much of it, though, does depend on who the governor is, because they're the ones who really set the tone for how the administration's going to work. And I think you had a governor last time around who, all of these projects that I'm talking about were sort of in the mix. There was no money for them. There was no plan for them. There was no ability to get those. But at least in this community, and I would definitely say there was not contact with, there's been a dispute between Lynchburg and Charlottesville. And when I say Lynchburg, I also mean Danville as well, between people downstate from Charlottesville and this community about how to solve this problem. And I think that you've seen this push and pull. When the last administration had wanted the Chamber of Commerce in Lynchburg and Danville have been asking for a bypass for many years. they had the ear of the last governor, and that project moved forward. It moved forward pretty swiftly, probably without communication and with a lot of explanation of why at that time. And there was a lot of, I would, and this is just, I can't get into all the details, but I'd be happy to talk with you more about this later. They didn't necessarily do the best implementation of how that project would move forward. They sort of, moved it forward kind of recklessly in a lot of ways, as opposed to this administration, which I think has done a much better job of at least, and there are some critics such as Neil Williamson from the Free Enterprise Forum, who believes that there's only the very slightest veneer of public transparency with this, because these projects were going to move forward, it seems like, well, Neil would argue that. And so I think it's going to come to, you know, I think that what I think we don't have is we don't have a lot of discussion up and down the corridor about what the best practices are. And so there are a lot of people down in Lynchburg who hold the opinion, and I think that it's rooted in some fact, that this idea that they built their bypass. Actually, it's a road I traveled on this morning. Danville built bypasses, and that there's been this sense, this expectation that somehow this community had to buy one. Had to build one. And I think you're going to continue to see that happen over the course of the next election. I mean, this stuff happens on a much longer time scale. If you go back to 1990, I mean, decisions that were made in 1990 were just rescinded. So it is, I mean, I think that's just the messiness of a democracy, of living in a democracy where you've got local interest, regional interest, state interest, and intrastate interests that don't necessarily always have the best public forum to have those decisions made. So you're right. There are lots of chefs in this, but at least in terms of this administration, they've managed to pull off something that the last one didn't, which was to move forward and have and of course my job will be to see how it actually is implemented, but at least they have a recipe for how they want to accomplish whatever this transportation souffle is going to be. But will it rise? I don't know.
Thanks, caller.
Well, I have another question.
Sure.
We only got a minute left.
Okay. Is there a person in the McAuliffe administration who is the poor guy who's going to get blamed for everything, who's trying to be the government voice to say this has to happen or that has to happen?
Well, that's going to be the thing, is that is it going to, yeah, I think you're right. If this doesn't go well, I think it would be Phil Schuchat, who is probably the person who has got the most public space on this. But it could be the Secretary of Transportation, who was ultimately the one. His name is Aubrey Lane. He's a former member of the Commonwealth Transportation Board who actually voted for the bypass 3 years ago and actually voted to approve that process. You know, I mean, it's important to, you know, the members of the CTB serve at the behest of the governor. The Culpeper District's representative, at least the previous one, James Rich, he was actually fired for voting against the bypass by the last governor. So I think that it's going to be incumbent, I guess, upon this administration to deliver what they've said. And if they don't, I think that I'll just leave it at this. The representatives on that last panel from Lynchburg and Danville wanted at least $5 million set aside for some sort of a plan for a bypass in the future, and that was not listened to. And I think that is going to come back to haunt them in the future potentially. But of course, remember, governors in Virginia can't succeed themselves, so it's going to be someone else completely thing to clean up if it all goes wrong.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Good questions. Just a minute left with our guest, Sean Tubbs, senior reporter of Charlottesville Tomorrow. You can find his articles on 29 and other stories, cvilletomorrow.org. Sean, we talked about all these different ways to help speed traffic through and all the money being tossed at the different projects, the extended roads, the throughway, so to speak. One of the simplest things people always talk about is synchronizing the traffic lights. Going to happen, not going to happen, or really everyone, it already has happened.
That is something that I will be writing that story this week, actually, because as part of this, there is going to be some of the money from that $230 million goes to augment something that was supposed to happen this summer, which was this newfangled transportation system that was going to sync up the lights, actually basically take them off their timings and change them in real time. I don't think that project is moving forward at this time, at least not on that large scope. It was supposed to be this one big, gigantic system to govern that. That's not, I don't believe that's happening this year. It's going to be part of this big package. But at this point, with all the disruption that's going to be going on, you might not necessarily want that system at a time when you've got actual construction happening, all this other stuff. But that will be part of it when it's all gone. This is a system that's been in operation both on the Pantops corridor, also on the Wards Road corridor down in Lynchburg. It sort of has helped to speed traffic along on those areas.
All right. Thank you, Sean Tubbs. SeavilleTomorrow.org. Next week, we will be talking with Albemarle County School Superintendent Pam Moran and Nelson County's new superintendent, Jeff Comer. Join us then. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong and Max Cecilia Struther. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.